working. We've withdrawn our labor, and we will not be working until we get a fair deal that we deserve.
There's a level of expectation that they have that is just not realistic.
We are in an existential fight for our profession against powerful studio management.
Besides, it's so far apart, it's going to be a while.
Fighting for a job!
It's a brutal turning point. For 100 days now, writers have been walking the line instead of working.
Our top story, the WGA reaching a tentative deal with Hollywood studios that could end the historic union strike.
A look back at the writer's strike over the past 146 days. Union writers on the picket lines, back and forth between executives like Bob Iger and union leaders, a sense of despair as the months passed, and finally, yesterday, a tentative agreement. This potentially ends the strike that has shut down Hollywood for nearly 5 months. The terms of the agreement remain undisclosed publicly, and they still must be ratified by the more than 11,000 members of the Writers Guild. Despite this agreement, this proposed agreement, writers have been told not to return to work immediately, but to wait for authorization from the Guild. Meanwhile, the fight continues for actors who have many of the same concerns. Joining me now with an update is Kim Masters, host of The Business here on KCRW and editor-at-large of The Hollywood Reporter. Hi, Kim.
Hi, Madeline. How are you?
Great, thanks. Okay, so from what you've been able to glean, what is possibly in this agreement?
It seems that the writers have made some real progress with all of those demands. I mean, that will also potentially apply to SAG-AFTRA in certain respects. They got minimum staffing on their writers' rooms. That was a fight. They wanted more people to be promised jobs in those rooms. They got compensation, some kind of a compensation agreement, so that success in streaming will mean a financial reward, which hadn't been the case. And the big sticking point that was to the bitter end yesterday was artificial intelligence. And we don't know exactly how that's framed, but obviously writers don't want to be handed a script generated by AI and be told to give it a polish or something. So we will see what that language is.
Right. And they also didn't want their writing to be used to train AI.
Right, which is a whole broader conflict, as you know, where people are filing lawsuits and right. It's a hot mess. Yeah.
It is a hot mess. Okay. So let's talk about the negotiations. This was over a period of 5 consecutive days of negotiations, I understand. What was the tenor? Who was involved? And what happened from as far as you know?
I'm not exactly sure about every person who was in that room. I know from the studio side, they had come up with Bob Iger from Disney, Donna Langley from NBC Universal, Bob Iger, Donna Langley, David Zaslav of Warner Brothers Discovery, and Ted Sarandos of Netflix.
Okay. So the big guns, in other words.
Yes. Well, it'll be really interesting to hear how the big guns try to position themselves in the aftermath as to who was the most helpful and who was the least helpful. So we'll be hopefully hearing some of that in the days to come. But of course, Bob Iger is considered the elder statesman of Hollywood at this point.
Absolutely. Well, Disney stock is down today. So how are the studios positioning themselves in the morning after? Because it sure sounded like the writers were jubilant.
Well, they are. And the writers celebrated into the night in a bar in North Hollywood, a big group. The studio people are quiet right now. You know, it's Yom Kippur, and therefore some of them don't want to communicate. But I will be talking to some of them in the hours ahead, I think. You know, it's been a very hard time for studios. Their business model is changing. People are cutting the cord. They're losing a lot of money on streaming. So for them, you know, I think some of this was just very destructive. And I think the conclusion and why this thing finally got to resolution is because there was a fear on the part of some of these leaders that if this continued beyond, you know, the end of September, say, it would permanently damage the industry. You know, it's not good when you're trying to lure people back to theaters to have suddenly got no fresh material. It's not good on you know, your cable bundle or wherever you get shows either to have a drought just when, you know, you want people to come back and really enjoy entertainment, and then to serve up not much is not a good approach for the studios.
So that's interesting, because at the beginning, everyone was thinking, well, the studios, they had so much cushion, especially Netflix had so much cushion that they could just wait out the writers, and it would be the writers who would be the first to buckle because they would be hurting a lot more.
Yeah, I think they did not realize how resolute the Writers Guild would be and joined with the Screen Actors Guild. I think they hung very tough, and the studios maybe were not prepared for that. So it paid off. Maybe the reason they didn't come to this conclusion sooner is because they were thinking, well, we'll save some money short term. But at a certain point, it became a tipping point, and that is how they felt, that this was being reached.
Now, what about this issue of transparency? You mentioned that there is some movement on residuals, which would be tied to the amount of time someone watches a show or a movie on streaming. So what does that actually mean? Did the studios and Netflix, did they give this up? Because this was what they didn't want to have at all, right? They don't want to reveal who's watching and or who's not watching.
Yeah, that would be a very huge deal. And even making the payments is a big deal. But as I understand it from my sources, and I caveat that we haven't seen it yet, they are agreeing to pay for success in streaming, but they are not giving up the data. I believe they will be relying on some third party that will generate some kind of ratings, you know, kind of Nielsen, could be Nielsen or something else, where that will be the metric used to determine the compensation for what success is.
Right. And so I guess the details will come out as the hours and the days progress. Why are they keeping such a tight lid on what happened?
I just think it's the timing. I think we'll know much more by tomorrow, if not sooner. You know, there is a holiday and certain people are not, you know, doing their usual thing, making the usual calls. And, you know, they have to show it to their board. It's all a process. And believe me, none of this came quickly or easily.
Mm-hmm. I bet. Well, okay. So the first thing we, as the viewers, might see, the first thing back would be what, the late night and daytime talk shows, because they don't have actors.
Sounds like it's not quite clear. I think the studios are saying, you know, you guys could go back, and then, you know, if it doesn't work out and the membership isn't happy, you can go out again. But I don't know if that's been resolved at this point. This is very much a moving target right now.
And next is SAG-AFTRA dealing with that. Have they been in any kind of talks at all with the studios?
Well, certainly not for the past 2 months. They gave the studios their demands. There's been a lot of speculation that the studios were not that happy with Fran Drescher of SAG-AFTRA, you know, her incendiary language and pumping up the actors to be on strike. But of course, now the studios want to pivot to SAG-AFTRA. One of the big issues for them is AI. They're worried about the use of their image without their consent, and also the use of, as the writers are, about use of their scripts to train the AIs. So maybe the Writers Guild language on AI, which, as I said, was a big sticking point and dragged on into yesterday, maybe that will help with what the Screen Actors are concerned about or not. But I think that they are certainly hoping that in some ways the Writers Guild deal will be a pattern for SAG-AFTRA.
Right. And do the actors hope that too?
Well, they must. I mean, look, a lot of these people who are in Screen Actors Guild and the Writers Guild don't work that much. And being out for this, it's created so much hardship. I mean, not just for the writers and the screen actors, as you know. It's had a ripple effect through all sorts of people who, you know, the crews, the people who serve the industry in various ways. It's just been completely destructive and horrible. And I think everybody's just hoping and we can get back together again and ratify deals in rapid succession and get Hollywood working again.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Kim Masters, host of The Business on KCRW and editor-at-large of The Hollywood Reporter. Kim, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
All right, we're going to take a brief break right now to pitch, to fundraise, because we are still in our fall fundraiser, kcrw.com/give. You just heard Kim say that there has been a ripple effect from these strikes. Well, we have certainly felt that here at KCRW. We are not doing as well financially as we did a year ago, and that is because of these strikes. That's just the way it is right now. Everybody in the LA area economically has felt the pinch from these strikes, and we are no different. So if you can help us out a little bit more than you normally do, that would be much appreciated at kcrw.com/give. This is our regular time to fundraise, and we do rely on you. We rely on our public, our listeners, to support us today. We have an extra special incentive because we have champions Randy and Sophia Greif and their cats, Tequila and Petra. They challenge you to donate today, and they will match your donation dollar for dollar up to $15,000. So this is a great time to donate because your money goes twice as far as it normally does. So kcrw.com/give, and thank you. Coming up, some Democrats want to keep Donald Trump off state ballots, citing the 14th Amendment. We'll talk about the legal basis for that with our legal, Jessica Levinson, next on Press Play.